The Earnestly Speaking podcast is a show that is founded on free-flowing conversation and may at times venture into mature subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Tuesday after championship weekend, of course, we are going to do our student game report with our guy, of course, Kyle Nash. I'm on Twitter at the SOTG, Kyle Nash with NJCSports.com. Kyle, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man. Good to be aboard. And don't forget Hilarity by Default, man.
Oh, yeah, that too. Hilarity by Default. That's right. On YouTube and hopefully on podcasts soon. I mean, if it isn't already.
Last week we put up our Battle of the Marvel trilogies with Thor versus Captain America versus Iron Man, and one of the more fun episodes, I dare say.
Are you looking forward to seeing Black Panther next month?
I am. I'm a little turned off because I know it'll be just politics everywhere, and SJWs and non-SJWs will say stupid stuff on Facebook, but I am looking forward to the movie, absolutely.
Because it's all a rage in the Christian household here, I'll tell you that.
I don't doubt it, and it should be, man. I think that character is a little, air quotes, overpowered, but that doesn't mean it won't be a good movie. And hey, I'm a Marvel guy, straight up. The only thing that was disappointing about Marvel was Iron Fist, and we'll leave that at that.
Do you think we're starting the show on comics, which is fine, me. Do you think there's a bit of an overkill now? Because all these superhero movies come out this year, two special episodes come out. Is it a bit of overkill, you think, with superhero movies these days?
Well, and listen, if you look at it purely from a numbers standpoint, like how many movies had there been with, you know, some sort of superhero as the running character? Sure, there's a lot of them. But I think the reason why it feels like saturation is an issue is because DC has missed the mark so badly, because Sony has missed the mark so badly. I think easily the worst movie of all time, people even proclaim in the internet hyperbole age, of course, is Batman v Superman, and it was definitely just a complete shit show.
I have still not seen that movie yet, and I'm scared too, because I keep hearing that the same comment you just made there. I hear the same thing from everybody else, that it was an absolute shit show.
It is, for the most part. There's some good moments in it that help balance it, but certainly don't save the movie. But I'll tell you, I'll put it to you this way. I'm a guy who feels they have to see something before they can criticize it. And let's put it that way. I think a lot of the numbers from people having seen it is it really as bad as advertised? And who knows? Maybe the bad press will make you feel better about it, that it was, you know, it wasn't as bad as everybody says. There's that silver lining.
Yeah, I agree. DC is always up the ball. DC has been relying on Batman and that thing for years, and they hit big last year with Wonder Woman, obviously huge draw last year. But their entire roster isn't really at the par with Marvel's, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, other than Wonder Woman finally doing her thing, which was a good movie. I'm not one of these weirdos that thinks it's best picture material, but. Yeah, Christopher Nolan did his thing with the other Batman and the other Batman. I'm always confused about that plural.
Yeah, but actually, it's funny. You know, I enjoyed the movie. I went to the theater to see it. My wife and I had a date night for that. We actually do date days because it's easier to get out of the house with the kids. But we went to the movies that day to see that movie. And I think a lot of it too, we liked it so much. Cause I think the expectations for anything DC outside Batman is a lot lower, that I think people were really surprised how well that movie was done. I don't think, looking back a year later, I think it was more so the expectations that was beforehand. Had we, you know, if it was a different story, if it was a Marvel movie, we always expect to be top of the line, and then sometimes it doesn't match our, you know, expectations. Wonder Woman, I think, came in with lower than usual expectations compared to other comic book movies, and really rose to the occasion. I think that's why it was so universally loved.
I'll agree with that, and I mean, listen, be careful talking about Batman and you know, that being a tough character. It has a history of a success, 1989, you know,
the best
obviously
one.
Yep. You got the Tim Burton Batman, yeah. I think Jack Nicholson did a great job as a Joker, though, you know, Heath Ledger was amazing, but listen, man, hell, even in the 60s, Batman had success being campy as hell on TV, so, you know, it's... That just proves your point about him being the bread and butter of DC.
I'll tell you what, though. For years, I never thought... Look, Jack Nicholson, I mean, diehard fan. And I thought there would never be a better Joker. And Heath Ledger's role, wow. I mean, I'm not going to say it's better than Jack Nicholson's 1989 version, but it's definitely, at the very least, matches up with what he did. Different characters in terms of the way it was played out. You know, but... I mean, wow. I mean, I never thought that would... By the way, favorite Batman of all time, between Keaton and Clooney and Kilmer and, you know, Christopher, you know, was the new one, from Dark Knight?
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale, thank you. Christian Bale. Who best Batman ever?
That's always tough.
Your opinion, that's all.
I say Christian Bale because he's the best combo of Batman and Bruce Wayne. Like a lot of the actors, they're an excellent Bruce Wayne and they're just terrible as Batman. You kind of had that with Keaton. He was great as Batman, but just couldn't buy him as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, a little goofy, goofy.
You know, for years, and they were trying for him to be eccentric, and it just played too much, you know?
Yeah. And not only that, you remember too, when he did that role, the movie before that was Beetlejuice. So imagine that transition from Beetlejuice to Batman. Now, I for years said Keaton was the best one, period, because I came from a biased place because those are my favorite movies, Batman and Batman Returns. But analyzing it now in hindsight and having more time away from it, I have to agree. I think Christian Bale is probably the best combo of the two. You know, I will say Val Kilmer wasn't terrible, though. He wasn't terrible. He gets panned a lot, but he wasn't terrible.
No, I didn't think he was terrible either. I think his Bruce Wayne was pretty good. His Batman was okay, but I don't think he's as good as Christian Bale.
I would say he's the best Bruce Wayne of all of them, individually, because he looks like an elitist.
Yeah, I can be sold on that. But and listen, let's give Affleck his credit too. Everybody thought he was going to be terrible at the job, and he did pretty well. Probably one of the better aspects of both the Justice League and Batman v Superman movies.
All right, we are now 7 minutes to the podcast, and we are talking comic book. I love it. We're diverse here, man.
Amen.
All right, let's go back to the AFC title game from Sunday. Kyle, where did the Jags blow it? Where did they blow it? What happened? Because we came to this game saying that Blake Bortles would be the be all end all, and Blake Bortles for the most part played a great game. Mistakes, all that. Where did the Jags blow it?
Well, so there's two moments, three arguably in particular, where for me I saw it and knew the game was over. I saw it and I'm like, yep, they're done. And it all goes all the way back to the end of the first half. You cannot give Brady 47 yards in penalties. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Now, the Gronk hit, everybody's saying it was dirty. It wasn't dirty. It was the unfortunate physics of Gronk being so huge and going up against DB, who's lower to the ground, and Gronk basically lowered his head into him. It was a good call. This 32-yard pass interference that should have been called defensive holding and not pass interference because the ball was completely uncatchable, that gave Brady the chance to get him within four. While he didn't run it in, personally, I mean, him and that offense. Whenever anybody says Brady, they really mean to say the Patriots offense would call a spade a spade.
Right.
Everything else was all Jacksonville's own fault. A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey played tighter than anyone's ever seen. At first, I thought it was just me, and I'm always going to be iffy to try to tell DBs what to do because of all the positions on the football field, that is where I'm the least versed. But I felt justified when Greg Jennings went on Colin Cowherd's show yesterday and said the same damn thing. Boye and Jalen Ramsey did their best impressions of Brandon Brown or holding people down the field. Now, as much as people want to gripe, McCown, there were six penalties against the Jags and only one against the Patriots. Yeah, I noticed that too. And that's not lie. The Patriots did get away with a lot. Holds everywhere, but, you know, it's one of those things where those calls are a lot more difficult to see in the trenches, in the wash, and all the minutia. When the Patriots go and take advantage of one-on-one coverages, the fouls committed are right out there in the spotlight to where even the blindest damn official is going to see it. And that's just the unfortunate situation. The Patriots' part were smart enough to be aggressive up front where it can't be seen, whereas in the air, and listen, props to Stephen Gilmore for jumping up and batting the one pass down. That basically ended it for the Jaguars.
And that kid, Gilmore, has been maligned by Pats fans all year long. He's the big contract corner they got this past offseason, and he had a horrible start to the year. But he made some big plays in that game.
Yeah, if you make a single play, you're suddenly anointed. Just ask Malcolm Butler. Anyway,
Butler's pretty good, though. He's not a bad player, though.
He's overrated. But the punchline to that is with AJ Boye and Jalen Ramsey playing tight down the field, you're holding guys that are a fraction of the dudes you shut down. You did a better job against Antonio Brown, who's arguably the best receiver in the damn NFL. And listen, I'm not going to be one of these guys who's saying that the Patriots are lesser for this, but it helps when you have two former number one receivers and Gronk on the field for most of the game. And, yeah, I know Gronk left early, but they still had plenty of weapons. The defensive scheme for the Jags up front was flawless. They stopped the Patriots' run relatively well until the end of the game where the big guys started to get tired. Really, that touchdown at the end of the half, if you put the Patriots in a position to where they're down 11 going into the half instead of by four, and, oh, by the way, the Jags won the toss and did their best to keep Belichick from doing his infamous double up after, you know, he'll score at the end of the first half, get the ball back at the beginning of the half and score again, fresh off of making halftime adjustment. You know, they stopped him from doing that much. But at the end of the day, for my money, extra opportunities were given to the Patriots, and they simply took advantage of them. It's what a disciplined team does. I know there are people out there that want to say, oh, Brady won it. No, don't be stupid. This was a team win. This was a coaching win. And this was basically a failure on the part of the Jags defense, specifically the secondary, to play four quarters.
Yeah, of course. And the Jags played well. Give them credit. They played the way you're supposed to play them. But you have to take advantage of the opportunities. I thought, yeah, obviously the score to go into the half by the Patriots definitely kept the game within reach. And then I thought there was like a 5 to 10 minute like segue in the fourth quarter, late third, early fourth quarter, where field position became an issue, where the Jags were getting the ball deep inside their own 10-yard line, and they couldn't sustain any drives at all. I thought that was when you knew.
Right. I don't think they converted any third down
in
the fourth quarter.
No. And you can't do that against this team. Sorry, you cannot do it against the pass. And by the way, and this is where I agree with you. And you know, I'm a Brady guy, obviously, and I'm always the guy that's like, oh, Brady goes all the time. And look, that's just my thing. I'll run with it, whatever. But I don't think the pass defense gets enough credit. The pass defense, I've said for years.
Right. Especially from you with your Facebook posts the next day. But yeah. I digress.
The Pats. even in years back too, even when they've had really bad defenses, statistically speaking, the Patriots' defenses have always been the best, probably in the league, situationally. Like if I need a stop right now, if I need a stop here or there, they come up with a stop when they need it. They've always been the best defense situationally in the league for God knows how long now. Falls to the coaching. I thought this game here, especially the fourth quarter, was Bill Belichick's master plan. Like, you saw why he's the best coach of all time. You saw it, how it played out. The field position and all that, and how everything played out. You saw why he's the greatest of all time. And, again, the Jags, you know, shout out to the Jags. They overachieved this year. They not only won a playoff game, won a division, they won two playoff games, and almost won a third. But, again, this is the lesson learned here. When you are playing the Patriots, you have to stay on the gas. Period.
You have to finish.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to finish. And listen, for those people who are out there with their tinfoil hats trying to say, the officials are supportive of Tom Brady. Look, you jackasses, just 2 years ago you were saying that they hate the Patriots because of Deflategate.
Exactly.
You can't have it both ways.
You can't have both ways, dude. No, you can't.
Complain,
yeah.
And, go ahead.
It is possible to not like a team or appreciate what they've done. Look, I hated Michael Jordan for years. But I also acknowledge he's the greatest basketball player of all time, quite possibly. And that Bulls dynasty was amazing. The 6 titles in 8 years. You know, you can have you can do both. You can say, oh, I can't stand this team, but I appreciate this player or this team. Knicks fans do it all the time. Sure. Knicks fans slobber Michael Jordan to this day, even though he crushed the shit out of them every year in the playoffs. You know,
the same thing we play for the Pats also. Yeah, and as much as I've never really been critical of Brady per se. I'm just trying. All I've ever done is bring people back to earth, I feel like. But these people that's like, I'm bored of Tom Brady. Stop it. You're a tarred bucket. Okay?
Yeah.
Get out of my NFL fan base.
Yeah, I agree. Fans like that, go away.
Are that dumb forcing me to defend Tom Brady? Kind of hurts my soul a little bit.
You know
because
what?
I know he's a convicted
cheater. You know another narrative that actually bothers me too more than anything else, and it bothered me this week, and I almost wrote about it. I was so pissed. This idea that, if the Jags-Eagles play in the Super Bowl, it's going to be a low-rated game. I'm not going to watch it. But aren't you the same moron that does not want the Pats to win anyway? I mean, seriously, you can't say that, but then you want the Pats to lose. Like, you're basically telling me that you want the result, but when you get the result, you hate the result. You can't play both ways.
Well, I see what you're saying, but by the same token, how many times has it happened? Oh, I'm not going to watch this, and they're going to turn me around and watch it. Okay,
exactly.
You're giving that. You're not wrong, but you're giving it too much stock, homie. That's all.
Same thing with the protesters. Oh, I'm going to not watch football anymore. Okay, I guarantee half of you assholes are actually watching the games this last couple weeks. Trust me.
How many Patriots fans should have missed their championship last year because they were going to boycott after Raw Jeff did what he did with the Deflategate, right?
What had happened was, okay.
Last thing, real quick, EJ.
Go ahead.
The one thing that people have to be critical of the officials is the Miles Jack play. That whistle blowing that play dead was basically ruined another touchdown, and that in itself would have put the game away.
Oh yeah.
But you know, listen. At the end of the day, you can complain about that. It's legitimate. But the Jaguars can manage one first down. At that point, you got to carry your portion of the blame as well. Simply put.
Absolutely. Moving on to the next game here, the AFC South game. Of course, Eagles wasn't even a game to watch. Eagles crushed the Vikings 3-7. Now, here's what's interesting about this game. Vikings get the ball first drive. Boom, 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 boom. They get Latavius Murray runs the ball well first couple parts of the drive. Then Case Keenum hits Kyle Rudolph for the touchdown. Very clean Vikings drive, but thinking, okay, this is going to be this is it. Vikings Patriots, and then the game literally flips after on the next possession. Pick 6, Case Keenum, and from there the avalanche is on. I'm shocked at the game, not because of how it played out, not because of the result, but how it flipped. Because if you saw that first drive, the Vikings, you're thinking, okay, this is it. This is sharp. It's going to be a game at least, and then they fall apart. What happened here? What happened?
You know, it's really hard for me to put a finger on that. You know, when you're dealing with guys that are great when they're not expected to be great, it's tougher to prepare for them. I mean, that's just kind of my take on it. As it stood, the Vikings needed a miracle to even participate in this game. And while the argument at the time was they didn't belong there, and I'm one who buys that theory, frankly, that first touchdown erased that for a moment, like you put it. But I have to be honest, for my money, let's just say the portions of the air quotes film that I watched, in other words, watching the game, what I saw was the Vikings defense up front looking more confused than they've ever been before. They relied entirely in the past on penetration through the middle. How did the Eagles combat that? Quick passes, forcing them to sit back, forcing them to, you know, not be as aggressive up front. And then they're doing stuff like faking reverses and then hitting Zach Ertz on a tight end screen. You know, some very exotic play calls. Not to say that Ertz is a bad athlete, but just, you know, from a textbook standpoint, you have to have a specific type of talent to run a screen or have an excellent deception. Well, that Zach Ertz screen got like 7 or 8 yards on its own, and meaning it worked. Why? The deception. That Vikings defense was confused. Now, does that mean they'll be able to confuse the Patriots in 2 weeks? I don't know. Give me more time to think about that. But I really felt like the Vikings were confused on defense. And obviously their offense, listen, the Eagles defense can play up sometimes, and they did that night. I don't blame anyone in particular on that offense. I'm putting it more on the Eagles defense doing their jobs when the Vikings didn't. We said it last week that we expected the Vikings defense to perform better, and they did not by a long stretch. So, and then on top of that, they were kept on the field by an offense underperforming. So at the end of the day, you fail in all facets of the game. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah, I feel like, look, I know it's overrated to say that, you know, last week's win against New Orleans, the miraculous win and the emotion that came after that may have actually been the reason why they came out flat. But, I mean, honestly, you can...
You can't say they came out flat, though. Look at that opening
score. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like, but then after that, like, they just did... I'm going to give Philly credit here, of course, for what they did doing their job.
Right.
But Minnesota just looked like... They just looked like the same team. And it was just weird to see that after that first drive. I thought that first drive was like, okay, this is it. You guys are making your charge to the Super Bowl. And they just fell apart. It's just weird. It's weird.
What it looked like to me is they were prepared for Nick Foles to continue looking like Nick Foles he did in the past few games he's played. Before the playoffs, I should say. And then he comes out and he doesn't look like that. He looks like what we were promised Nick Foles would look like fresh after Wentz actually being hurt, which tells me that Foles was getting into his zone and getting hot just in time for the Super Bowl. And that's the best thing the Eagles could hope for.
Yeah. Nick Foles, man. What a turnaround. Like, let me be honest here. I'm not totally surprised this happened for the Eagles. Totally. Because having number one seed, the home field advantage, it is a thing to some degree. Depending on who you are, home field advantage can be a major advantage to you. Philadelphia is one of those crowds that, when they are, you know, look, I'm on Eagle. Look, you know, I can't stand the Eagles, obviously, but their crowds are loud, you know, especially during the playoffs. And look, at the end of the game, it's a football game. Nick Foles has played. Nick Foles isn't some rookie that just came out of nowhere. He's actually played in playoff games before, okay? And he's played, what, 60 games in his career? So it's not like that he's come in a situation where he's never experienced before. I thought the whole thing about Nick Foles, you know, and the Eagles, you know, oh, the number one seed, but they're going to fall apart, was a little overrated. That only stemmed from the fact that they didn't play that well last 2 weeks of the year. But, I mean, there was always a chance for them to turn around. I mean, Atlanta, as good as they are, they could be at times, they're consistent. So there's always a chance for the Falcons to lose that game to the Eagles the first time. Minnesota, too. And the way that Minnesota played last week against New Orleans, there's always a chance for them to lose this game as well, too. So we shouldn't be totally surprised at the result, honestly, in the end. And like I said, there's also precedence for this, too. We've seen quarterbacks, like, step in here on moment's notice and get hot late in the year. My New York Giants, 1990, Phil Simms gets hurt week 15 against the Buffalo Bills. Jeff Hostler comes in there, and you know the rest of the story. Takes them away to the Super Bowl and wins the whole thing. So there is precedence for this.
Well, hell, I mean, we have a worse example than that in Flacco in 2012. I mean,
Flacco's a starting quarterback, though. No, I mean, that's a little way more. Flacco's a starting quarterback, though, so it was a little more. I mean, it was shocking, still, what he did, but Flacco was an actual starting quarterback. But having a backup quarterback on short notice come in and do what he did, there is precedence for this already.
True.
You know, so I mean,
yeah, that's a good point.
I think people overrated that whole situation to some degree. So that's just my opinion there. You do know that I cannot root for the Eagles on this circumstance, right? Like this game, this Super Bowl here, Kyle, is my personal worst nightmare. My two most disliked teams in the NFL are these two teams. Okay, like if the let me make this clear for you real quick. If the Cowboys are playing the Patriots, I'm rooting for the Cowboys. If the Redskins are playing playing against the Patriots, I'm rooting for the Redskins. I can't do the Eagles, bro. I can't do it. I told Pats fans this on social media. And you saw. There is one scenario that I would root for you guys in the Super Bowl. And this is the one. It's playing out. For the next 13 days, I am Tom Brady fanboy.
You already are Tom Brady fanboy.
It's going to get worse now. I'm going to root for you guys. It's gonna get worse now too. I might put a Pats fan on my SUV now. Pats fan back on there.
Wow.
Seriously.
Well, hey, since if you're gonna do all that, can you at least get like St. Patty's Day style Patriots stuff so it's green? Because if they see that it's green, they'll know you're actually a Giants fan because of kryptonite for the Patriots. I'm just throwing that out.
Well, look, I have three reasons to root for the Patriots to win this game. Number one, I can't stand the Eagles. And that's very clear. This stems with childhood. I've had some bad experiences with Eagles fans going back to middle school. So it's ingrained.
Oh, dude,
it's ingrained in my DNA.
They're a unique fan base.
It's ingrained in my DNA, yeah. Kyle. It's ingrained. It's people say, we'll just change it. No, I'm not going to change it. It's already there. It's like a mole.
Well, it's not just – listen, man, if they boo Santa Claus, you're on to something. I'm just saying.
Right. Two, obviously Brady, you know. I'm a Brady guy. So I can stomach a 6 Brady Belichick title. I cannot stomach an Eagles Super Bowl championship. No, sir. Can't happen. And three, this is petty and selfish – I still want to be a Giants fan. I still want to be the only team that gave the Pats their blemishes. Like,
that's asinine.
I do not care. I can't stand Barstool Sports, Kyle. But they wrote a piece about this actually. Someone wrote a piece about this yesterday about if you're a self-respecting Giants fan, you cannot root for the Eagles. And everything's in the article, I agree with him on that.
That's ridiculous.
I feel the same damn
way.
By
the way, you're citing Barstool. That's proof it's ridiculous.
No. I read the article. I'm not even a Barstool fan. I can't
stand
Barstool.
That's changed my head.
Huh? No, I can't stand Barstool, though.
So you're citing Barstool. That in myself proves ridiculous.
Oh, no. And I can't stand Barstool. You know that. But everything in that article he said is the way I feel. You know what I mean? There's a video from Bill Belichick's documentary from 2010, where he revisited the Giant Stadium, talking about his memories there and how much he loves that franchise, and he started crying, all that. That alone, the respect he has to that franchise, even after beating him in the Super Bowl twice, you know what I'm saying? That to me, that's to me is the ultimate. All right, but furthermore, I've been saying for years, this is the greatest dynasty in NFL history. Period. End discussion. Okay, and furthermore.
Yeah.
They lost only twice the Super Bowl. Who they lose to? The Giants. Twice. I want to stay that way. It makes the Giants look better every time when the Pats are still winning Super Bowls, but the two losses are against us. Petty? Yes. Who gives a fuck?
Well, listen, I'm not prepared to stand down this whole greatest dynasty thing because it's adorable when you have the rules changed for you to facilitate that.
God,
moreover,
here we go.
You're also more than one time convicted of breaking the rules in some way, shape, form,
allegedly.
Or fashion. That's not great. Allegedly? No, there's no allegedly. Spygate was a bust. You lose. That's not alleged. It's called facts. Okay? Nice try there, Patriots fan. I said it.
For the next 13 days, yes.
Listen, this is why I got into the business of fanhood, because I actually, watch football and care about. I follow the Niners, and I hope they do well. But I'm smart enough to not do stupid stuff like, I'm never cheering for this. God.
I can't do the Eagles, dude. Right now, there are certain things in my life I just can't do. Like, Kyle, I don't think you understand. There is no team I hate. Forget the NFL. There is no team or franchise I hate in sports more than the Eagles. Okay?
Isn't that clear? And you're not trying hard enough. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just saying. It's ingrained since childhood. I've had bad experiences with Eagle fans growing up as a kid. So it lends to it. Like, even look, I'm telling you that the Cowboys are in this spot, or the Redskins. I root for those teams all day long. No problem. I don't have dire hatred for the Cowboys like I do for the Eagles. Like, the Cowboys, I hate them, but it's like America's team, you guys fucking suck, that kind of thing. But it isn't one of those things, you know. Redskins too, same thing. Oh, Deadskins. Rivals. But I have a dire hatred for the Eagles. I will say this, though, to be fair. Being a big Carson Wentz fan and being a guy that called Carson Wentz being really good last year, before he actually was really good, it does soften some of the blow from the green. But
not really.
Overall, I can't see the Eagles. Not really. Not really. I'm just saying that this doesn't sound partial. I can't do it. Sorry. That's Super Bowl.
We were both calling him the Mercedes Wentz, dude. I get it.
That's correct. That Super Bowl line, by the way, Pats -5.5. I think it's a bit too high to open. That's a lower to at least 4.5, 5 points. What do you think?
I think it's exactly where it needs to be.
Why?
I don't see. Listen, here's every Patriots game. In the past few years, right? The Patriots set the bar. You play up to it, and then the fourth quarter happens, right? So what they're looking at are the matchups on paper, as they should be. Listen, man, I'm not saying that Vegas isn't good at their job, because, well, they in fact are. Just saying. But I think what isn't being accounted for are two particular plays. The two-minute drill, and then, or not two particular plays, but two particular points in the game. The two-minute drill at half and the fourth quarter. Basically, if you're wanting to watch only the commercials and only tangentially focus on the game, there's only two points you need to watch, okay? 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. When that clock ticks down, look at that scoreboard. If it's still close, come back in the fourth quarter, watch it. And then if the Patriots get up by more than a touchdown, they're going to win. Because really, more often than not, Brady wins by 3 points. So, yeah.
I'm going to say that their history, they don't win close Super Bowls. They win close Super Bowls. All the games are close, no matter what. So 5.5 points is a bit
too high. Name one that wasn't, bro. I'm just saying.
I'm saying. I mean, the one that they actually had the most, won by the most biggest margin, was the one last year where they literally scored an overtime touchdown. So,
yeah. Well, I think the next closest one would have been the Panthers Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, that's technically a Patriots win, but it's more accurately referred to as a Falcons choked up, shout out Danny Thompson. But, I mean, you're not wrong. I'll put it that way. It took an overtime win for their largest margin of victory in a Super Bowl. That's a good point, Mike.
Right. How should the Vikings approach their quarterback situation? Because none of them right now, and if they didn't do nothing right now, all three, Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater, and Case Keenum, are all free agents. If they just did nothing.
How should they approach their quarterback?
How should they do? Who should they commit to?
How should they approach their quarterback situation? They should pull the goddamn fire alarm. That's what they should do. Listen, man, if your options are go with the guy you drafted or franchise the guy that you didn't draft but looks good but not great, I'm going to go with the guy you drafted. I mean, at this point, he at least shows you that he has the vigor to come back and play through a horrific injury, no question. For my money, and it's not going to happen this way, but for my money, I think they should part with Bradford, keep Keenum in the chamber, and come out with Bridgewater starting. Now, I doubt Keenum will want to do that. I'm sure he's going to seek a job somewhere in the NFL, and he'll be the next victim in what we can easily refer to as the Matt Flynn anomaly, though he's done a lot more work than Matt Flynn did in one game of amazing. But, yeah, at the end of the day, I see Bridgewater as the guy you want to sign up. That being said, if the Vikings were to draft a quarterback in this draft, this class is said to be so good, yet some of my draft guys have told me that it's completely overrated. That being said, with as, air quotes, good as this quarterback draft is, if the Vikings were so inclined to draft someone who is a project, for lack of a better word, that's not a bad practice either. They have a good enough run game. Their offensive line's bolstered. Their defense is ridiculous to recover from mistakes. You know, they're not I think it's something that needs to be addressed. It's an emergency. Like I said, pull the fire alarm. But once they actually start to make the decisions and get things in cement, I think they're going to be better off than you can imagine. That defense doesn't care who they're playing against. That being said, that first-place schedule they're going to be playing next year is going to be a little problematic, as the kids say.
I totally agree with you, everything you said there about the who they should do. Let Bradford walk, number one. Okay? Franchise Case Keenum. And Bridgewater's stock is really low.
See, that's $25 million.
Yeah, but you get one more year to look at this thing. Like, it makes sense. It's not like
$25 million.
I understand that, but we don't know how good Bridgewater is. This is the thing, the Bridgewater injury again. He's back. Yes, we know he's back, but we don't know until we know. So Bridgewater's stock is low right now. So you need to hold on to your roster. It's a one year hit. It's all it is, a 1 year hit. So I would franchise Case Keenum. I mean, the guy got to the NFC title game. Okay, so that's, I mean, he, it should be like the last little reward, okay? And to be honest, from what I understand, I got to talk to some guys about this, but to my knowledge, their cap situation is pretty good right now too. So they can necessarily take the hit on this one. So I would franchise Case Keenum.
Oh, their cap situation is good, so they should overpay for Case Keenum.
Well, you still got to hit. Okay. You still hit the floor though. There's still a floor to be reached. So I would sign Keenum to a franchise deal and Bridgewater to see where it goes. And if Bridgewater is actually semi-ready to go beyond next season, then yeah, obviously, and if Case Keenum doesn't play well, then you know where to go with that. Bridgewater's your guy going forward. But at this point, I would say, I mean, and let's be real here too, Kyle. Case Keenum 1 year was a lot more, was pretty much more productive than Terry Bridgewater's been in 3 years or there too, in my opinion.
Then who has been in 3 years in year two?
Huh?
I didn't hear what you said. Then who has been in 3 years or two?
Case Keenum this year was more productive than Teddy Bridgewater in the previous 2 or 3 years he played before the season.
Well, of course, but he was a rookie. Case Keenum's a journeyman.
No, I think Case Keenum is a decent quarterback, to be honest with you. I thought he was decent in L.A. too, but you're playing with Jeff Fisher. Oh, oops, did I say that?
Yeah, I liked him. I liked him in Houston when he almost beat the then undefeated Chiefs or he lost to by only a single point.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. All right, a couple things before we got to go. Cause we got a couple of coaching hires here. First of all, the Pat Shurmur to the Giants, so this is now official. After what we saw against the Eagles last week, because there's a lot of Viking people are saying that, Viking fans and media are saying that he's to blame for the loss, which I think is ludicrous, to be honest with you. Maybe he's part of the problem, but he ain't the main problem here. This is my opinion. Do you like this hire, Pat Shurmur? You like it? I mean, I think you discussed it last week on the show, but based on what he did with Keenan and whatnot. But your thoughts, not as official.
Yeah, I like him as an offensive guy going to that team because the defense right now is obviously the strong point. And we saw an offense that basically fell apart. Now, towards the end of the game, the offense played a bit more motivated because there was talk that Eli might retire. But at the end of the day, you're going to need a guy that has to revive that offense and probably do it with someone other than Eli Manning at the helm if things go the way that they seem to be. Not to mention, you need somebody who's on the offensive side of the ball more often so you have direct access to try and temper/handle, for lack of a better word, Odell Beckham Jr., simply put.
Speaking of Eli Manning, by the way, Doug Gettleman announced that he will be back next year with the team. And even though they may still draft a quarterback, he will be coming to camp as a starting quarterback next year anyway. So the Eli Manning thing has pretty much been resolved. He'll be back next year as a Giants quarterback.
Sure, and maybe next year. But I'm more talking like, will he be around in 2 years or 3 years? We really don't know.
Oh, of course not. We don't know. I mean, he's on the back end of 30. So, yeah, of course.
Right.
Even though Brady and Breeze are changing that dynamic, but hey, it happens. Okay.
Do you think, anyway?
What were you going to say? Go ahead.
Do you think Eli is that form of athlete? I just don't.
Yeah, but he's durable as fuck. I'll tell you that.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, all right. Mike Vrabel, new Titans head coach, former Patriots star, and assistant. He was in Houston, wasn't he, before?
Yeah, Vrabel was in Houston. I'm a little intrigued. I don't know that it's necessarily the guy they want, but I'm not prepared to condemn it by any stretch. Yeah. I have my questions, but this is a guy who maybe it's time to give a shot to, and maybe they need somebody who will. Well, listen, preparation, in my opinion, seems to be what the Titans are missing, and Vrabel comes from a culture therein where preparation is key. It'll be interesting. I think that's a good culture.
And again, it's a new name in the network now. So people say, oh, it's a bad hire. How do you know? He hasn't coached before. you have nothing to run on. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, honestly, all we can do is look at it and see how it works. I will say he's definitely a football guy. If you look at him from his playing days, he's definitely a football guy, you know. But whether or not he's going to be the guy that changes Mariota's career around, that's another story. All right, and finally, Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator Steve Wilks is now the new Arizona Cardinals head coach. Any thoughts there, Kyle?
I don't like them going after a defensive guy. That to me is problematic. They have defensive talent that's held it down. Granted, it's not what they used to be. Of course, Calais Campbell left to go to Jacksonville, et cetera, et cetera. The punchline is this. That offense is about to be in a damn shambles. Carson Palmer's done. That's the thing of the past.
He may have
done well enough. Yeah, that may be well enough for his career. David Johnson's future with his injury will be interesting to see how that goes. Larry Fitzgerald is on his way out. You need somebody in that offense prepared to transition it. It's not a desirable job. And the reason why they went with the defensive guy is maybe this is the only guy that they could get. I don't know. All I know is I don't want that. If I have a choice, I don't want that Cardinals job. You know, the Titans job actually looks better than that because they have Mariota and a team that's on the upswing. You know, next year, I'm probably still in just as good an opportunity to pick the Titans or the Texans to win that division over the Jags. That's where I upset it.
You did say it. Yeah, you did say it.
I really did. You were in the room.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know enough. I'm not in the locker rooms and things like that to really see these guys operate. But on paper here, what I see, this does not wow me as a hire. This is certainly not the same as Josh McDaniels in Indianapolis. I'm very intrigued by that.
The only thing I'll say about this is, like I said about Vrabel, we have nothing to run on. We'll see how it goes. Maybe they get that offensive wizard in there, you know, the opposite of Sean McVay. You know, somebody who's brings in an offensive wizard as a coach, as a coordinator, and things change. We'll see. But
Use Mike Zimmer? Can we use Mike Zimmer as a better example?
What I'm saying is that I agree, what you're saying though, I agree with you. I have the same thoughts when it comes to the coaches. Like, I'm not big on defensive coordinators becoming coaches. Recent history has proved us right, actually, on that. So
I just have my issues with all this Sean McVay buzz for him being coach of the year, and it was best explained by NGSE Sports own Jason Spearman. McVay is nothing without Wade there to help him out as a defensive coordinator. Zimmer, however, that dude's running that show a lot more directly.
Yeah. And to McVay's credit, he's also the one that empowered Phillips to be the guy to run defense. So to his credit, he knew that.
He's smart enough to know he don't know nothing, and he's our age.
Right. Well, he's younger than us, actually. We're old.
Yeah, thanks for rubbing that in.
Shut
Appreciate
up.
That.
I'm the same age as you are, or close to it.
Good job, Julius.
Julius. Okay, Carrington. All right. Anyway, follow Kyle on Twitter at the SOTG. All his great work, of course, at the ngsports.com. Student of the game, of course. Anything you want to add before next week's? Next week we'll come back here and talk Super Bowl.
Hey, listen, man, an honor, a joy, a privilege, as per usual. And I'll say this is my final thought. There's no homework. There's no textbook pages you have to look up. But you do have to remember this one thing. If you do not pick Russell Chamomile Wilson as your MVP, I don't care if you made the playoffs, you're doing it wrong. Signing off, class dismissed.